Welcome to Women Who Protect, a series within the ONTIC Protective Intelligence podcast. In a profession largely dominated by men, we spotlight women working in a wide range of positions within security, protection, and law enforcement. We'll hear their stories, discuss their accomplishments, and get their advice for women and girls who may be interested in a career in protection or security. I'm Dr. Marisa Randazzo with ONTIC's Center for Connected Intelligence. After nearly three decades of experience working in security and protection, first at the U.S. Secret Service, and then in the private sector, providing security guidance to corporations, educational institutions, and high-profile individuals, I know firsthand the immense value that women bring to this field, and I know the challenges that we face. I look forward to sharing the stories of women who protect and hope they inspire other women and girls to join our ranks. Now, on to the podcast.
Wendy Bashnan is the Director, Security and Fire Protection and Chief Security Officer for Scout Motors, Inc. As an accomplished risk and resilience activist, she has a history of advocating strategic partnerships, directing high-performance teams, and fostering business missions through enterprise risk management, decision-making processes, and policy execution. As a former senior foreign service executive with the U.S. Department of State's Diplomatic Security Service, she has more than 30 years of experience in data-driven, risk-informed, business-focused continuity and resilience solutions, as well as domestic and international law enforcement and investigations, extensive financial management, complex operations and logistics through Security by Design, and traditional security program leadership. Her proven expertise to promote and implement intelligence-based security and safety strategies within international organizations enabled streamlining processes and optimization of resources. As a transformative business enabler and cross-functional leader, she is adept at leading dynamic and diverse global teams and cultivating resilience culture and risk management. Wendy, welcome to Women Who Protect. It is wonderful to have you with us today.
Thank you, Marisa. And let me just say congratulations on hosting a fabulous ONTIC Summit. I really enjoyed it. And not just the content, but also meeting everybody. It was a great location. It was really fun. It's the highlight, really, of my year when it comes to conferences. So thank you. And then thank you for following up and asking me to join the podcast today.
Well, it's such a pleasure to have you here. Personally, for me, you and I have had a chance to work together over the past couple of years, and you were there at the launch of our initiative for Women Who Protect and have been a huge supporter. So I'm delighted we finally were able to have you as a guest on this segment of our podcast. And I'll tell you too, I am so glad to hear that Summit was a great experience for you. This was, I think, my third Summit. Yes, I am part of ONTIC too, but I was just blown away at what our marketing team and our thought leaders created. So it's become my all-time favorite security event as well. So I'm so glad you enjoyed it too.
Yeah.
So the focus of this part of our podcast, the series within our podcast, Women Who Protect, is really to give an opportunity to showcase all of the different career options there are for women and for girls considering a career in security, to go into security, law enforcement, intelligence, protection of all different sorts. So I would love to start first with your background. You have a fascinating background, both within government service and then also within security. So I'd love for you to just kind of give me and give our listeners an overview of where you started, what got you into the field of security and protection, and then what led you to the position you have today with Scout Motors.
My career, I was fortunate to land in an opportunity with the federal government after serving on the state government side as a probation parole officer. And I did that for a couple of years while I was also applying for the federal service. For me, I've always been driven by a need to serve. And whether that was because I play a lot of sports and I love sports, that I feel like I serve as like a team member and that kind of thing. But I was fortunate enough to start a career in the federal government with the State Department, with its law enforcement agency, Diplomatic Security Service, of which I spent 28 fabulous years living and working all over the world, serving my country, serving this great country, but also learning other cultures and experiencing how to work with other people, and sometimes people that don't even like me because I'm a woman. I rose up through the ranks, made it to senior executive or senior foreign service, as they call it in the State Department. And I'd kind of peaked to where there really wasn't any further challenges for me. I didn't want to be an ambassador, even if they had asked. They probably wouldn't have asked. But
they should have.
Well, that's a whole nother story. But, you know, but I wasn't ready to like stop. I'm very energetic and I still have a lot to offer and to do and in my mind accomplish. And so I left government service and went into the private sector and went to work for a company that had been around for over 100 years and had gone through different iterations and was in a transformative stage where they were splitting and dividing up the company by the product that they were selling. And then I came in thinking, okay, this is a great restart for this company. I took this time to learn the business side of security versus the law enforcement side of security. Mm. And it was a fabulous experience to use for my own professional growth, but also to see how other people look at security. You know, do they look at it as an enabler, or do they look at it as the people that say no to everything, right?
Right.
And it was a phenomenal 2 years. And then I had the opportunity to join a company that was just starting, but bringing back an iconic brand to then build a new product. And so now I'm with Scout Motors, Inc. And when they talk about greenfield and like starting from scratch, this is truly, and I call it giant Jenga, because we are on the front lawn, mind you. We're building a product that we're going to put in a manufacturing plant that we're building at the same time, while we're also building our corporate and enterprise structure the same time, simultaneous. And it is exciting. It's exhilarating. It is also frustrating and tiring, but I can't help but smile and enjoy. And when I look at people and they say, why are you still working? You know, because it's 8 o'clock at night or something like that, or it's a Saturday or a Sunday. I don't think of it as working. I have been fortunate my entire career to know that this is what I was meant to be doing. And it's never been work for me. It's always been a pleasure. And I really think that if people listen to their gut and pay attention to what really drives them, I believe that they can find exactly what I found.
Wendy, that description was so great. There was so much in there. I want to dig into some of it. You mentioned a few minutes ago about how when you left government service, left the State Department and moved into the private sector, that you started to see security as a business, or see the business side of security rather than the law enforcement side. Explain that more to me. I'm fascinated to hear that perspective. And what did you learn there?
Yeah. So for me, what I noticed first off was they use a different language. They use different terminology, right? And their focus is different. The focus is, and this completely makes sense, don't get me wrong, it's about making money. It's about improving their brand. It's about selling product. And when that is your focus,
then it makes sense to me in my mind that, you know, your terminology is going to be different and how you view security in the back end of that, right? For me, I recognized quickly, although I'd already believed this in the past, like security has to be the enabler for whatever, whoever we're supporting, right? Which is different than law enforcement. Law enforcement, we're about enforcing the laws, right? There's no enabling there. If anything, it's different, right?
Right. Yeah. But your role in diplomatic security service and my role in Secret Service was also about enabling the movement and functionality and visibility of world leaders while keeping them safe. So there is a facility, there is an enabling. But I like that from the business side, really thinking about it as an enabler, rather than, as you just said a moment ago, like the person who always says no, the entity that always says no. You've got to find a way.
And I know, I always tell people when I'm talking to, especially people coming into security at the beginning in their careers, and they always say, like, what do I need to focus on? And for me, I think I shock them because I always tell them communication. Ah. You have got to master your communication skills. And it's not just about how you speak to people, because I think sometimes people just gravitate to that end. And it's not also about how you write things, but it's how you meet them on the level where they are. And sometimes you're talking with a CEO and sometimes you're talking to the janitor.
Yeah.
Right. And it's right. How you involve both of them and everybody in between when you're talking in business. In business, it's not about just saying something one time and walking away and say, I said that. No, it's over communicating if you want to. It's communicating. And if they're not understanding, guess what? You have to go back and you have to look at what you said and how you said it, because they're not understanding you. So you need to adjust and then go back at it again. So I always tell everybody, if you're looking at what you want to major in, yes, I want you to major in security and stuff like that, but I want you to minor in mass communication or marketing or things like that, right? And I know that's counterintuitive to what a lot of people say now, which is, oh, I need to get cybersecurity. Yeah, that's always good too. But if you can't communicate with people, you're still not going to be successful.
I think it's such an important point. I've seen this with colleagues who've tried to make the transition from government service to the private sector, from security or law enforcement in the military to the private sector. And we're so used to, from our old jobs, using acronyms and using shorthand or professional jargon that just doesn't land within a business. And so you've got to learn a new language. And as just as you're saying too, marketing skills, persuasion skills, like how to make your case.
Right. And I will say this, diplomatic security, as much similar to, I think, your experience at the Secret Service, because you get exposed to a lot of different cultures, to a lot of different people traveling from other countries, you're traveling to different countries. And so you get that opportunity to kind of hone in that skill and to practice that skill and understand that, what I just said may not mean the same thing to them, but I need to make sure that they understood what I was saying.
Yep, exactly. And I think being able to not only communicate, but listen as well as to what someone's priority is. What are you trying to accomplish here? My job is to make sure nothing bad happens or we minimize damage or whatever, but what's the bigger picture of what they're trying to accomplish at the same time?
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest with you. That's the one that I struggle with every day. I'm a talker. My family said I've been talking since probably birth, probably even in, you know, my mom's womb. But listening is just as vital, because that's how you determine both, is your message getting across, but then also, are they engaging you so that you know that they fully understand and that they bought in? Right? Because what's the point of having a security program if no one's going to do what it is that you want them to do?
So tell me, how has this played out for you in your new role as you are working to build security into an enterprise that's actually kind of, it sounds like it's a second genesis, this new company that you're working for. And so they're building the facilities and they're building the products, but they're building off an existing brand and a reputation. And you've got to weave security into all that. So what has that been like? What skills have you had to use?
So it's been exciting because, and again, I still need to do that communication part, but for me, what I'm still focusing on right now, because we're still early in this stage, is learning what the business leaders want to do. Because, right, we're bringing back an old iconic American brand, the old Scout. It's not going to be an International Harvester Scout. It's going to be a Scout Motors Scout,
fun,
right? Both the SUV and the pickup. But when you do that, and you do it modernized, bringing back electric vehicles. Like, I needed to learn about the automotive industry. Oh. I had to learn about new technologies and batteries, right? Batteries, for that matter.
Yeah.
And then I needed to learn, well, how do we want to protect our product? Like what, and again, not on my side, but how do they want to protect it? I needed to know where they were in their spectrum of the way they looked at security. Because when I figure that out, and I say I figure because it's still work in progress, right? Come back and check with me in about a year and a half and we'll see where we are before the product comes out. But because then I can bring a security program that meets their intention, right, to enable them, but also makes them aware of where risks are, right? So that we collaboratively determine, okay, here are the threats, here's our risks, here's the potential impact, and what are we willing to live with? Because you can't get rid of all of it, right?
Right.
You know this
right.
better than anyone. I should shut up and just let you talk.
No. but you're right. I mean, you can never get rid of risk entirely. And so it is really like, where's their tolerance level? And what are the trade-offs that they are willing to make or comfortable making so that you can then protect around that?
And when you look at my experience that I've had going from federal government, which has a different risk appetite, to a company that's been around for 100 years and been relatively unscathed. So they had a different risk appetite too, because they didn't think anything would ever happen to them. And then a startup company, which, to be honest, has a real high tolerance for risk because they have to go fast, right?
Oh.
But it's about, where are the most critical elements, right? Is that doing that business impact analysis, although we're not really doing the business impact analysis yet, but in my mind, we're setting the groundwork for the business impact analysis of knowing, or here's our critical assets. Here's what absolutely has to be done in order to produce this product to be able to sell it. Currently, right now, we sell nothing. So guess what? Our stat sheet looks really dim because there's nothing.
Nothing coming in.
There's nothing coming in, right? So how do we look at risks, look at threats first, and then look at the risks to then say, okay, we got to go fast. So what can we tolerate? But then what do we want to go back and look at in 6 months? Because we may need to adjust that as we grow.
How have you sort of, as the security director here, have you become a strategic partner with the C-suite, or how did you get into that position? Because it sounds like these are building discussions. They are embarking on and building something from the ground up, and it sounds like you're already part of it. So how has that come about, that you've become a strategic partner, or are you positioning to become a strategic partner?
So I still think I have a little bit of imposter syndrome. And I say that because I know that I'm a strategic partner. I know they see me as a strategic partner, but I just don't feel like I'm providing that strategic partnership yet, because I'm still learning.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to balance that. I'm trying to give myself a little bit of grace in this to understand that you can't know it on day one.
Yeah.
And add to that, because we're a company growing fast, I have to also spend a lot of time in the tactical. When you are a person of one that makes up the entire security team,
yep,
you have to do everything, which means, yes, you are getting into the weeds and you are, you know, not only reviewing documents, guess what? That document doesn't get written unless I do it, right? So there's now the stage that I'm in, and I guess these are different stages, but because as I build the team, I can pull away from the tactical and get more into the strategic, of which then I believe I will become that strategic partner that they need me to be and that they want me to be. So when you're a team of one, it is really hard to be the strategic leader, because then who's doing the tactical?
Right, exactly. The tactical has to get done.
Yes.
And the strategic, and as you and I have talked about this, like what the strategic is often the like, okay, when all the tactical is done at the end of the day, then you get the time or the bandwidth to think more strategically, but you're also exhausted from doing the tactical all day. So it's like, do you actually have the chance? But you need to be doing, you really are doing both at the same time.
You know, for me, here's one thing that I noticed. Sometimes strategic means different things to different people. Mm-hmm. I find, and again, I think when you're a startup company, strategic means both strategy and implementation at the same time.
Oh, interesting. Yep.
Where when you're with a company that's been around longer, your strategy can be very much the why we need to do something, right? And then the tactical, or I should say the operational, becomes more of the, okay, well, how will we do it?
Yeah.
Right. And how will we judge success? But the why is that critical part. And again, when you have as much experience as I do, I can be tactical because I already kind of know in the back of my mind the strategic. Everybody else may not know. And when I say strategic, not how to run the business, but how to run the business's security program.
Yeah.
So in my mind, even though I'm operational, I'm strategic at the same time because I understand the why. I understand the importance of it. But when you're with a company that is starting up, you have to be able to do both. And when you come to a company for the first time, whether it's a startup or a company that's been around 100 years or even longer, you need to take that time to learn where that company is in its understanding of strategic. And you're going to be sucked into the operational and the tactical. But force yourself to spend some time in the strategic, engaging other people who you think are strategic leaders, right?
It's such valuable advice, because coming into a new position within security, whether it's government service or you're transitioning to a private sector from government or from one private sector to another, you know, you're brought in for your expertise. And so there's got to be that push where it's like, well, I need to demonstrate my expertise from day one. But the reality is you can't demonstrate it and really be as effective and impactful as you want to be until you really learn this new entity. And so to your point of like, you need to spend time to get to know their history and their journey and their strategy before you can truly be woven into the fabric of the business and be that strategic partner.
Absolutely. Learning has got to be constant, and learning has got to be fast. But learning also has to be intentional. Mm-hmm. You need to find good mentors and understand that mentorship is not, it's an art. It's not just about giving someone the title, oh, this is my mentor, and understanding that you can start with one and you'll shift to another as your professional growth increases, right? Or as you change your expertise.
Yeah.
And be willing to do that. And I always tell everybody, you never have one mentor. You've got to have a mentor for all kinds of possibilities. And when you go into a company for the first time, and whether the company is government or an NGO or the private sector or whatever, you know, if you're an introvert, you have to be intentional about getting out and knowing people. And it's hard these days in the remote world.
Yeah.
But you have to be intentional about it. You can't expect that other people are going to do it for you.
I think that's what I mean. Speaking as an introvert, that's what's one of the big challenges, because that interaction can actually be draining and tiring. It's like, well, let me just like spend some quiet time and get some work done and prove my value that way. But it's so important, especially with any entities that are operating even partially remotely, because you don't have that face to face. You have to make time to set up appointments and listen to those people, if they're mentors, if they're leaders within the company. Shadow them if you can, which is harder in a remote setting, but kind of learn from them. Like, tell me what you're doing today. Like, what are the things that you are doing on a day-to-day, or what are the things that are taking up your time today? And what are the questions that you're looking at or the challenges you're facing, and get to know the company that way. But I will tell you from the introvert side of things that's a draining and taxing. I did not come out of the womb talking.
Say this, I think, maybe in the remote world, it is a little bit easier in this. I'm going to just say it in this way. If you ask, whether it's your direct supervisor or a colleague on your new team or whatever, and say, hey, would you just invite me to sit in the back of this call and just listen? There's no effort on their part just to add you to a call. But the value that you will get out of attending what would have been in the old days, I say old days, just a few years ago, where you would just say, hey, could I just be a backbencher in this meeting so that I can understand what the topic's about?
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's what you're essentially doing, but you don't have to engage with anybody. You're just asking one person to add you to the invite. Most people are going to oblige.
And it's so smart, because then you can sit there quietly, you can listen, you can take notes, and then questions, you can then meet with your supervisor afterward or whoever is the meeting chair and say, hey, what happened here? Explain this to me. I didn't understand. I want to understand more. And you're not interrupting a meeting.
Right.
That's
right.
Great.
And then you make your other follow-up meetings more impactful, both to you and to them, because they're like, wow, you were paying attention. You were listening. Or, oh, I totally missed that in the meeting. Thank you for sharing that with me.
That's right. You might catch something. That's a brilliant suggestion. I love that. I absolutely love that.
We'll get back to the conversation in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you about ONTIC Center for Connected Intelligence. In the world of safety, security, and protection, we know that sharing information is crucial. That's why we created the ONTIC Center for Connected Intelligence. The center is a hub for the ongoing exchange of security strategies and best practices, insights on current and past trends, and sharing valuable information through expert discussion and analysis. It's made up of subject matter experts with decades of experience across a wide range of disciplines. To find blogs, podcasts, webinars, white papers, and more, check out the center by visiting ontic.co/center. That's ontic.co/center.
Tell me, whether it's at Scout Motors now or in your previous positions, what have you done to measure performance and measure effectiveness? And how do you distinguish between the two?
I would say early in my career, I focused a lot on measuring performance because I'm a competitive person. So I talk a lot and I'm competitive, right? So for me, it's always about the score, right? And when you get your evaluations, I was like, so is this the equivalent of a 95 or 100? Right? Because 100 is what Wendy wants, right? Not that I got a lot of hundreds, just mind you. But so for performance was important to me because it also helped me focus on the tasks that needed to be completed, right? What was my time frame? What was my budget? What was expected to be the outcome, right? And then in my world, I expected, all right, this is how you measure performance then, right? How many of those things am I getting accomplished? But then I think later on in my career, I realized, and this was still while I was in government, you need to shift. So performance is okay for some things, But for other things, you need to shift to effectiveness and or impact, however you want to look at it. You, for me, and maybe this is just because I've been around for a while, I think if you focus on the effectiveness, the performance is automatic. And I've had the luxury of already learning this, right? And experiencing it. So like, I don't need to know if I've got 75 out of 100 people attending this training course, you know, I just need to know, did they learn what I needed them to learn? Mm-hmm. And they're going to implement it. Because in the end, security is everybody's responsibility. And if everyone understands their role, then it doesn't matter whether you are a team of one or a team of 1,000. If you have all of your employees, then you will be a team of 1,000 or 50,000 or 300,000, however big your company is, right? So that effectiveness to me now, easy for me to say now, I've made mistakes in the past. I've learned from those, right? Effectiveness is where I think I find my sweet spot now.
It's such an important distinction that you often don't hear people making. It's so easy to equate or just assume that you're measuring the same thing and you're really not.
And I think that's because a lot of our KPIs are generated around performance. How many, you know, emails did you respond to? How quickly did you respond to them? Was it resolved on the first time, right?
Right.
And we don't look at, but was the response impactful? Is the problem gone? Or is it just going to come back tomorrow?
It's like the distinction between busyness or activity and productivity.
Yes.
Just because you're busy and responding to emails right away and Slack messages and doing all those calls doesn't mean you're actually getting things done. Really.
Why I also work on weekends now.
But I love you. You have clearly found your passion in security and all different aspects of it. And I, as you were describing your professional journey and trajectory, did you know at a young age, as you look back now, did you know, was there anything about security, law enforcement? You said that you were always drawn to service, but within service, did you see anything about protection or law enforcement or anything like that, that gave you a hint as to where you'd end up?
I'm going to tell you, when I was really young, I wanted to be a sportscaster.
Ah.
My father was a sportscaster. And he said, no, I couldn't be a sportscaster. That's for another conversation.
Okay.
So then I wanted to be a lawyer. And the reason why I wanted to be a lawyer, because the law intrigued me, right? And not just American law, but, they do it differently in Europe and they do it differently in Asia, even though probably at that time I didn't know how different those are. So when I was going into college, in my mind, I was always going to be a lawyer. And then I realized probably in my senior year of undergraduate that maybe lawyer wasn't the right thing for me. I mean, yeah, I like to argue and but that service part was still kind of missing. And then I gravitated to law enforcement. And then it was about finding the element of law enforcement that would keep my passions going. And that's where I started as a probation parole officer because that's where I was able to just learn while I was in graduate school, going and getting my master's in criminal justice. And then, but realizing I can't make a living doing that.
Yeah.
Right. So then I went to the federal government and literally I was just fortunate that I found out what diplomatic security service was because it matched up so many things that then really accelerated the passion that I have to where I know it's cliche. It probably irritates people when they hear it, but I've never worked since the day I joined DS, until now, which I have retired and gone into, I've never worked a day in my life. And it irritates. I have friends and family members. It irritates them. They can't stand it.
Are you no longer invited to parties and family holidays?
No. I mean, they. Well, let's just say I'm invited, but they don't ask me what I'm doing anymore because they just don't want to know what the answer is.
They don't want to hear. But it's so, it is truly wonderful to hear that this has not felt like work for you. This is what you love doing. And that you didn't also know, you didn't wake up knowing from a young age, like, oh, this is exactly what I want to do. That you sort of found your way there through things that started to ignite that passion.
Yeah. And I think, again, you have to give yourself a little bit of grace and know that you may not hit it on the first time.
Yeah.
But be willing when you realize it to move. And I know it's not easy. I look at friends that are, they're in a job that they thought they would love, mm-hmm. that they ended up not loving, but that at this stage in their life, in their family life, they can't take the risk of changing. And that's hard. So, you know, I watch friends again with their children, and their children says, oh, when I grow up, I want to be an artist. And, you know, and of course we all go, oh, you can't survive on an artist's profession, right? Or I want to be a teacher. Oh, you know, if that is what ignites the fire inside of them, then we need to enable them to succeed.
It's so true. I have a colleague who wrote a book a number of years ago called Our Children's Strengths. And she had been a principal at a small school and had looked at kind of this messaging that we as adults give to kids around, well, first of all, a horrible question to ask kids in my mind is, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because most kids don't know. They haven't been exposed to the array of possibility. And this is one of the driving forces behind this podcast series is let's shed some light on all the different things that women and girls can do within security and protection and law enforcement, et cetera. Because you just don't know from a young age. Like you've heard about, you know, police officer, firefighter, doctor, nurse, lawyer, like a teacher. You know a couple of main categories, but that's it. And so this book and this whole idea focused on don't necessarily ask your kid what do they want to do, but ask what do they like doing? What are the activities that really kind of make them feel energized, make them feel like it's not work, but it's fun, or it's an activity they want to do, whether it's organizing a closet or, you know, enforcing rules on the playground or whatever it is that they like doing, like what activities do they like? And then direct them from there into careers where they get to do those things. And it sounds like you found that naturally. You found your way into security through things that excited you and also ruling out things that as you looked at them more closely or more in depth, you realized this isn't a good fit for me.
Yeah. And let's face it. I also chose a profession that is male dominated.
Yes.
Still today. And yet I was still successful. And again, it goes back to using all the different skills, you know, communication and et cetera, to be able to succeed. I realize now I see the power of a podcast like this that didn't exist when I was growing up. Yeah. I mean, like when I say I was fortunate, I really was fortunate that I landed where I landed. Who knows what would happen? I'd probably end up in prison otherwise, but I can be devious at times. I mean, you just ask my family. So, but power of podcasts like this and the power of what we have now with the internet to be able to change gender roles and no longer. And again, I use my own personal experience where when I wanted to be a sportscaster, my father said, you can't be a sportscaster. You're 5'4". You're never going to be a professional athlete. And in order to be successful as a sportscaster, this is back then, it's dated information, but nonetheless, women were not sportscasters. It was a 100% male dominated society, industry, right? So, but that does not have to be the case now. And so letting people open up their eyes to how security can be a passion for them regardless of what the industry looks like today, think about it 20 years from now and be part of that change. Yeah. That's what's important, not only for girls that are growing up and thinking about this, but also young women who are just starting into the profession.
And to add to that, I'd say that one of the things we've seen in this in sports casting that we've now seen in law enforcement as well is really kind of not just accepting the underlying assumption. So the advice you got from your dad was, you know, you have to play the sport. And let's look at your, with your physical dimensions, you're not going to be a professional sports athlete. Therefore, you can't be a sports caster. And you look today and you go, well, no, but people have encyclopedic knowledge who've never set foot on that field or pitch or whatever, but they know it inside and out. They know the people, they know the stats, they know strategy. Therefore, they make good commentators. They are good sportscasters. And I think we see the same thing with, especially for women and girls in security and law enforcement, that we had, you know, I grew up in the original Charlie's Angels days. So the original, right? The original opening. And for those of you who don't, go ahead and search on YouTube for like the opening clip for the original Charlie's Angels. But the message was like, here are these three little girls went to the police academy and they were then tunneled into jobs that were just for girls or women, you know, sort of secretarial and crossing guard and things like that. And then Charlie, the wonderful, benevolent, anonymous soul that he was, took them away from all that and made them into these incredible powerhouse private detectives and private eyes. So I think the same thing has happened for women and girls in our industry, where you think differently now, and you think very in very wide terms and 30,000 foot views about all the different things and ways that women can have an impact within security and law enforcement. And you don't have to come from law enforcement to work in private security. You can bring incredible analytical skills. You can be a phenomenal intelligence analyst. You can communicate well and learn the industry once you're in there, but learn how to communicate well, effectively and persuasively. So there's so many things that women and girls can do, getting out of that, challenging those underlying assumptions that you need a certain amount of physical strength or speed to be in law enforcement or security or protection. There was one at the very start of this podcast series. I interviewed a woman named Kate Bright, who runs a company called Umbria International in the UK, and she does private executive protection details for high net worth and highly visible individuals. And for a lot of the women, her female clients, they want female protectors. And she has started to look not just at women who've come from law enforcement or military, but she has actually started to recruit from professional sports teams, female sports teams, women who play soccer, for example, because she said they are used to working as a team. They are used to working under adverse conditions. They are used to pushing themselves and realizing that they are part of a larger enterprise. And so she's had great success looking there. But that's not the assumption, the underlying assumptions that got either of us into this industry or the dominating sort of factors that when you and I entered this field. So I love the fact that we're seeing things turn on their heads, and it's becoming great for women and girls to be in security and protection.
And I love the fact that you brought up security is so much more than just a guard or just a gate and a camera.
Yeah.
And there are so many other avenues that still mean security. People just need to think, and we're only limited by our creativity, really.
Well, you said it a moment ago that if everyone in the company understands security, then you've got that force multiplier. Yeah. You've got that motivation, and you've just increased the factor of your security department by X amount because you've got people who understand what you're trying to accomplish, and they're participating in that,
and they understand the why.
Yeah,
I mean, you can get people to participate, but if they don't understand the why, they're going to walk out the door and do whatever it is that they wanted to do to begin with.
Or do it inside and then as an insider threat.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I could talk to you all day. I want to ask you kind of one more wrap-up question, then see if there's anything we haven't covered. But as we've talked about it, what advice do you have for women and girls who may want to get into, whether it's State Department, Diplomatic Security Service, private security, corporate security, anything like that? What advice do you have for them?
First, a shameless plug, I'd say, listen to podcasts like this.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I mean, do your homework, like research what it is that's out there today, right? And that would appeal to you. Like maybe you are just an IT genius, right? Okay. Then look at the elements of that where security comes into play and then focus on that. And then again, challenge yourself, push yourself out of your comfort zone to go out and reach out to people. This is the beauty of social media, the beauty of like LinkedIn's and all these other kind of Indeed's and et cetera, and communicate with people that are already in the field and say, hey, I'm thinking about this. Do you have 5, 10, 15 minutes, whatever they'll give you, to ask a question, you know, to be able to hear something from their experience, make a connection. Because once you make a connection, then it snowballs. Then it's, oh, let me introduce you to this. Let me introduce you to that. Have you thought about this? Because then it opens up your aperture lens of what the realm of possibility is.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself becomes that skill set. Because once, because if you can do that once, twice, three times, whatever, how many times you need it takes, then you start making yourself willing to be uncomfortable for other things.
Yeah.
And then it really, the sky's the limit. I mean, there's no, really and truly, we talk about the glass ceiling, and there is still a ceiling, but it's not glass anymore. It really is, how much further do we need to push? Because we can push, and we will push, right? I won't be happy until we see numbers that reflect numbers within the security industry and the profession that reflect what our population is. And that's not just gender. That's race, it's ethnicity, it's everything, right? Because that's how we truly get that inclusion and diversity element so that we start understanding each other on a people to people relationship.
I think that's so smart because I feel like the strongest security comes from people bringing different perspectives and different experiences and different backgrounds to a problem to solve together. And if you've got people who've all had the same experience, we're all look the same, whatever, you don't get that diversity of thought. And and security, good security requires creative problem solving. And so the more diversity you can bring to that, better solution.
Marissa, I remember early on in my career, I would have supervisors who would put in my evaluations, oh, Wendy has strong soft skills and blah, 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 blah. What is soft skills?
I don't know.
That is BS. Like, first of all, they don't have to be soft to begin with. You can be very frank. I never sugarcoated anything. Maybe that's why they said they were strong. Soft. But I think when you look at what has made a lot of people successful, you go back and you peel the onion, you realize that it's less about certain skills that people associate with law enforcement or security. And it is more about those people skills of they engage and they communicate and they, you know, they're trying to look at a problem from all angles to come up with a solution. And whether you want to call that, if you want to call it soft skills, okay, then call it soft skills. But that listening, that, you know, communicating, engaging, you know, those things, that is what helps you succeed longer term.
And I think embedded in that is curiosity. You want to listen and learn, right? But also humility. And one of there are aspects of security where there are some incredibly successful individuals who also bring really huge egos, and the huge egos I have worked for some, you might have as well, but the huge egos,
yes, just a few.
End up tripping them up. It's sort of a Greek myth in action, and ends up being, you know, the something that creates a downfall because they aren't curious. They think they already know the solution. And I think really good security, whoever it is that goes into security, that having curiosity and humility, there are two characteristics that really help you set up to succeed. So
love that. I love that. Yes, because they all play off of each other too.
Yeah.
Which is important.
Is there anything we haven't had a chance to? I mean, I could talk to you for hours. I don't want our podcast listeners who tried to limit this.
Back in a year.
Yes, exactly. Another episode of Wendy and Marisa solve the world security problems. But anything else that we didn't have a chance to cover that you wanted to tackle?
No, you hit them all. If I were to say, like, one of the things, and I don't know if this is more for people when they're first starting out and maybe more for mid-level people, or, you know, how do you defend your budget?
Yeah.
And I talked about this at the summit. I said, we've all been there at the restaurant table when you got your friends and your family and it's time to pay, and you get all, you have those two, you have a relative and a friend, and I call them the alligator arms, because they are not reaching across the table to grab that bill, right? They want you to pay.
Yep.
And the thing about security is everybody wants it as long as it's free. For me, the ability to collaborate with other people in the business and get buy-in that this is not only a benefit to the security team, what do we care? It's a benefit to the business teams. And if you can get that business leader to go into a budget meeting and say, I need drones, or I need a better visitor management system because this one's not working, right? When they say that they need something, it carries a different kind of weight. It's not that one weight's better than the other. It's just a different kind of weight that then enables the people that have to figure out where to put the money to say, well, this isn't a security ask. This was the production team asked this. Maybe we should consider that, right? And then we're sharing the cost.
Yeah.
The way I look at it. Now, it's got to sit in somebody's bucket to spend and use the expertise. So again, probably something more for someone who's at that mid-level or higher to say, all right, I'm just not getting a response to needing more money in order to do what the business needs. Try this. I've had success with it. It doesn't work every time, but I've had success.
It's a great strategy. And I feel like it gets back to that creativity. You are trying to solve a problem, not because you're trying to build an empire and have a larger budget. You're trying to help the business succeed. So if you can't go straight up, you know, straight through, how do you go around over whatever to try to reach that same end? Again, because you're trying to help the business succeed. So you're framing it differently, it sounds.
You and I have had experience because you and I have worked together in the past. Insider threat programs, insider risk programs, they're not a security program. They're a business program.
Right.
And because of that, you need to have HR involved, legal involved, the business units involved, the cyber and the IT teams involved. And oh yeah, the security team's going to be involved too. But it's not insider threat or insider risk is not the security's problem. It's the business's problem.
Right.
How do you want to tackle it?
Yeah. And to, in a way, not only call attention to it, but sometimes I've seen it helpful to make some of those other entities uncomfortable. Like when they have had to face a tough problem and realize this isn't a secure, like, yes, security can solve part of it, but the bigger issue takes all these different teams feeling the same pain or feeling the pressure and solving it that way. So that's a great, great strategy. Wendy, thank you. This is, it's
thank you.
Always wonderful to talk with
great.
You. I love spending time with you. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to spend more time with you at Summit, but this was even better.
Next year.
And I just want to thank you for sharing your insight and your expertise and your guidance on all this. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for sharing all of your expertise and experience, not just on the podcast and not just at Summit, but also what you're doing for the industry as a whole, because you help many of us look at things from a different lens, which is important. So thank you.
This episode was brought to you by the Ontec Center for Connected Intelligence. Learn more at ontec.co/center. Again, that's ontec.co/center. It was produced by AJ McKeon. Our music is a track called Roll the Dice and was written by Mark Wallach. Please remember to rate and review our podcast on iTunes and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have questions, we'd love to hear them. You can reach us at podcast@ontec.co or visit ontec.co/center for more information. I'm Dr. Marisa Randazzo. Thanks for listening.